my most prayerful and grateful pranams at the feet of my most beloved Sadhguru, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Ram. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. Sai Ram.
My dear sisters and brothers, once again, before I forget, I want to really thank the organizers, the regional president, the vice president, for considering and inviting me to be part of this amazing satsang that we had the last couple of days, and we still have a little more to go. This is the kind of environment that Swami really wants us to have, extended family understanding, where we all, you know, one Sai Ram brings us so close to each other. We may not know each other, we may meet once in a year, once in a couple of years, but one Sai Ram and suddenly the whole region becomes one big family. And this is exactly the golden age already happening in little bits here and there. That is the beauty of Swami's mission. And so it's a great honor to be part of it. It's a great privilege to be part of it. And I've heard in the course of these two, so many experiences, not only of Bhagwan's leelas, but also of how people are playing their role in this aspect of giving. Somebody's built a whole house and offered it for SSC centers. It's amazing to even listen to these things, because that shows how it's a joy to be part of this mission. So in any possible way, we have to ask ourselves, how can we be joyfully participating in this without any expectations? We don't have to worry about where this mission is going, how many people are getting transformed. I remember once Swami liked my speech so much that he asked me to follow him after his talk in Dasara. I followed him to his room in the mandir, and then he called a couple of other VIPs and asked, how did this boy speak? And they said he spoke well, and Swami said, you think he spoke well? I said, yes Swami, I think I spoke well. And then because Swami expects that confidence, so I said, yes Swami, I think I spoke well. So you think people listen to you? Yes Swami, I think they listen to you. You think, so what do you expect? What do you think people will do? I said, Swami, I want to transform people. The moment I said, I want to transform people, Swami started laughing so much that tears started rolling from his eyes. Transformer. like this he started. He couldn't believe I actually said the word transformer. And then he looked at the others, he said, and this is why he was laughing. He said, for 60 years I've been talking, nobody is transformed. I've been talking for 60 years, nobody's transformed. This fellow wants to come and give one speech and transform me. And he laughed. And then he paused. Then he said, Chudo, and very beautifully he said, that is not your job. Your job is to share your experiences, your faith, your lessons you have to learn from your heart. Nu chesidi ade, adi ni pani. Your pani, your job is to share. Transformation is their karma, their prapti, their samskara. That is not you. You don't have to do that. So that was such an important lesson for us, that we don't have to look back at what is the result of so many retreats, or what is the result of this. I've been a center president for so long, have more devotees come to my center, have what has happened. Well, that is good for an organizational perspective. When you search from your heart, you don't have to judge yourself as being successful or not. It is, have I done my best to be a part of this organization? Have I done my best to be a part of this mission of Swami in any way possible? You don't have to be an office bearer to be a seva. Like I was explaining yesterday, even if you allot a parking place for somebody else, you never know, some old person will say, thank God, he must be praying for a closer by parking place. And you became an instrument of God right there, then and there. So in what way can we do our very best? That is what matters. The journey is what matters, not the goal. Because then the journey itself becomes the goal. The effort that you put in excelling yourself, the effort that we put in being as best a devotee as I can, the best way that I can in this given circumstances, the way I've understood Swami, how can I practice His teaching? How can I influence my family, my children, and my own self and my community to the best extent I can? Don't compare yourself with somebody else and say, but look, he has done this, he has built a big mansion for Swami, I can't afford it. Doesn't matter. But can you plant a tree in the name of Swami? That is as good as building a mansion. Everyone to his capacity. That is why in Ramayana, you have the story of the small Anil, the squirrel, who wanted to help Rama. And Rama, you know, said, yes, your help is absolutely important. Every one of us play a role in this great, great mission. And to me, it's the greatest honor to be part of this. It is just the honor, the joy of participating in something that the cosmic intelligence in the form of an avatar has come and established. Huh? And that's why I think it was brother Jeff who said yesterday, among the billion odd people, 7 billion odd people, a few 100,000, 200,000, or maybe there are 100 million devotees, but out of that, if you say there'll be 2 million actively participating in this mission, it is such a rare privilege that you and I are sitting here talking about Swami, thinking about what can I do to be a part of this mission. Not that we need to help this mission. Don't think that you and I are going to carry the mission on our shoulders and somehow if we don't, his mission will fail. No, he's done it. You know, as one of my brothers was saying yesterday, what Swami has achieved is so far beyond our wildest expectation. He has already set the standards for his mission. He has sowed seeds. And as Baba would tell us once, I have sown the seeds. Every seed of mine will germinate. You may not see it. If not now, if tomorrow, 100 years from now, it will germinate. So every seed that you have sown in our heart, even if you don't see it germinating in your heart, it could probably be in your child's heart. It could be in the grandchild's heart. If you think of Bhagavat Vahini, the Bhagavatam itself was great-grandson of Arjuna, if I'm right. He's a grandson of great-grandson. I think it was a great-grandson. He has not seen any of this. But hearing the story, he was instrumental in bringing Bhagavatam and the entire story of Krishna back into life. So we now know what is going to be in the future. So you and I are not taking that mission into the next level or carrying out Swami's mission. We, you and I, are enjoying the privilege of being part of it and enjoying the joy of doing our little bit to be part of this divine mission. And in that process, get closer and closer to the one we love the most, the one we adore the most, so that one day, a little bit of that color of Swami, a little bit of that light of Swami will shine through your thought, my thought, through your word, through your deed and action. And you begin to live a life as a street lamp, as Swami always wanted us. This is the beauty that this is the kind of mission, that this is the kind of doors he's opened us. And he's opened so many doors. He's opened Seva as a door for you to be part of it. If you want to sing bhajans, he's opened bhajans to be part of it. He's opened Veda chanting to be part of it. He's opened every religion to be part of it. So it's never done in the history so far. If you are struggling how to make a center, you know, when I travel all these places, I get these questions, how do we actually make this unity of religions in the center, because we are more or less Hindu, should we sing English bhajans, how do we open the doors? I said the fact that you're working on it itself shows that success. There is no one answer to it because there is no precedent to it. What Swami has opened us is think, make this happen because nobody else has done it. And that is the beauty of it. So it's okay to discuss, it's okay to debate, it's okay to have different opinions. Oh, we need to have only Indian bhajans. Oh, bring in 2-3 English bhajans. Or whatever it is in the bhajans, or in study circles, or how do you want to celebrate different religions? How do you want to bring SSC programs and incorporate everything, right from Sanatana Dharma to the Bible, to the Quran, to the Book of Torah, all of this, how do you bring all of that? It is open for debate, it is open for learning, it is open for growth, and it will go through many versions. That is the beauty of it. So it is not like we are confused. It is the opportunity given for every one of us to bring in our little bit and say, this is what I have understood. So maybe can this help? You know? So the fact that Swami has opened something so unique and we are all part of something that has never done before itself is so, so wonderful. Swami, you know, when we were becoming lecturers, you know, we were the first batch of students in Swami's college. I joined him when Swami started the college in Puttaparthi. And so as the college grew into universities, we saw the growth of the university. I can speak from the university point of view. And by the way, whenever I say this is what Swami said or this is what I understand of Swami, it's literally what I've understood. It's not, I don't represent any other group. It's just me. It's like, you know, the six blind men story. They all go to see the elephant. They're all blind. They've never seen an elephant. They're blind from birth. But each one goes and touches one part of the elephant. And guess what? Each one comes out and describes the elephant in different ways. One person touching the tail of the elephant, says, oh, the elephant, what do you say is an elephant? It's probably like a snake. The other one holding the leg of the elephant says, but this elephant is like a pillar, it's not like a snake. And they become arguing themselves. Why? Because they didn't see, they couldn't feel the elephant in all its grand and glory because it's so huge. That is how Swami is. To each one of us, he means something. And when somebody takes a platform, has a mic, he's just sharing his ignorant little perspective of what he thinks Swami is. Always take everyone's perspective, every person's experience with a pinch of salt. In other words, you're saying, okay, this is his perspective. It is not the perspective. It can never be the perspective because for every one of us, Swami is our own. If I ask each one of you, when you close your eyes, you don't think, let me meditate on Sundar Iyer's Baba. You can't. It can never, in the wildest imagination, you won't be able to do that. Why? When you close your eyes, it's your Swami. And that Swami talks to you. That Swami inspires you. That is a voice you need to listen to. So everybody gives here is this satsang. The beauty of satsang is merely to encourage, share experiences, lessons taught. So we feel, oh my gosh, I didn't get that perspective. Maybe I should think on and from that angle as well. It's Swami encouraging us to share. That's why we leave very energized after the retreat. Having said that, when Swami was training us as senior boys, because we slowly became from the boys to senior boys, and we used to get interviews with Swami, and we would go out and share that what happened in the room with our students. And then the beauty is 20 of us will listen to Swami, 20 of us will go to 20 different rooms, 20 of us will tell 20 different perspectives to the students. Because each one of us take home what we need at that moment. But here's another lesson Swami taught us in the course of that. And I'm sharing that from the point of view of we are part of an organization of Sai where Swami has lent his name. And therefore he allowed us to call it Satya Sai organization. You know, Swami doesn't belong to the organization. The organization belongs to Swami. However big the whale is, the sea does not belong to the whale. The whale belongs to the sea. So Swami has allowed us, granted us the privilege to take his teachings, practice his teachings, and showcase it to the world. He's given us the opportunity. In helping somebody, you are helping yourself grow, right? So in that context, he was training us. And he made a very important, he shared us a very important analogy, and I constantly think of this in my own life, with every step I take. And I just wanted to share that analogy. He says, the banyan tree, because he was explaining to us why discipline is important in the hostel. Why should you emphasize discipline in your life and in generally in the hostel. So, he said the banyan tree is so huge. All the cows, all the animals come under it for shade. It is selfless in its service. It only thinks of serving. In the hot sun, everybody comes and seeks it. I want you all to be like banyan trees. Give shade and shelter to everyone. But, he said, you have to first become strong like the banyan tree. When the banyan tree was small, it was protected from the very animals which it is going to give shade later on. Because those animals would have eaten it. So it built a fence around it and started digging roots deep inside. Once it was strong and firm, the fence was removed and it was able to provide shade. So it's an important concept where as you work, as you're helping others, you don't have to forget your inner strength because your inner strength is what reflecting outside. People get inspiration from your acts, thoughts, words, deeds. It's because the strength from within you helps you provide the shade outside. So initially, why do we have encouraged discipline to our children? It's because we want to make them as strong as the banyan tree. But initially, you want to keep them away from the very things they want to do. If you jump into it too quickly you jump into it to save the world, then the world might eat you up. So you and I have to do this. There's no clear answer to this. But you and I have to ask, question, am I now strong enough to take this step forward? If I'm strong enough, if I feel I'm strong enough, then I will go and do this. Otherwise, I'll keep working on my own, get my roots further, deeper. As I keep helping, I get my roots further and further, deeper. And let the banyan tree become stronger for me to take bolder and bolder and bolder steps to provide whoever, whenever they can come and seek shelter under this banyan tree. So this was the analogy he gave, and I thought that was it's something, a very beautiful thing. Another story I came across, and I thought it helps us, for those of us who want to be part of Swami's mission in whatever way possible. even as simple devotees as we call ourselves. I'm not an organization, because somebody said, I'm not any office bearer, I'm just a simple devotee. He said, there's no such thing as simple devotee or big devotee. We're all devotees, period. And we claim ourselves as devotees at Babaji. He has to tell us, you know, we have earned that right from him. But nevertheless, it won't harm us carrying that label as Sai devotee. I think we do that as a matter of humility and pride at the same time. This is a beautiful story about a man who wanted to serve God. This is not quoted by Swami, but this is something I came across and I felt it was very much in line with what I was doing in my life, and I know all of you all are in the same path, and so I want to share that. So this was a man who wanted to be an instrument of God, but he was weak and he was sick and he was lying in his bed most of the time. But his heart and his soul was, God, just make me an instrument. Use me in your mission. Why am I so sick? How can I do something to be part of your mission? I want to spread your love and message. And so in his dream, Jesus comes to him in his dream and he says, okay, you want to be my instrument? I will give you a task. If you do that task, you will be my instrument and you will do whatever you want to do. And he says, please tell me what I need to do. He says, outside your hut, there is this huge rock. I want you to push the rock. And this man gets up and he's so full of joy and heart is filled. He says, Jesus actually came in my dream and he's given me a specific task to do. And that is all I need to do, is push that rock. And he was so happy. He goes out. Of course, it's a huge rock. And so he starts saying, how do I now get it out of the way? How do I push it? He starts pushing it with his hand. He spends 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, nothing. It's not budging. It's a huge, huge granite. And so he gets a crowbar. He tries to dig around it. It doesn't work. At the end of the day, he is so tired, more weaker than before. And he's very depressed, but he says, I won't give up. I'm going to try this. And he goes to sleep. The next day morning, he gets up again. And he again tries different ways to push the rock. And he tries day after day after day after day, weeks after weeks. And about 3 months passes. And by then, the rock has not moved an inch. He's tried digging under it. He's tried doing everything. But this is so big. He said, how could I even do this? And so he goes to sleep completely. He's given up. He gives up and he goes to sleep, very depressing. This one task you gave me, I'm not able to push the rock. You gave me to push the rock. I've not been able to even budge it in one place from one, even an inch. So I'm a real failure. And if I can't do this, obviously I'm not meant for this mission. Okay? This is something like the story Sister Faranak shared about the pots with holes in it. So he goes to sleep thinking of this and very depressed, and Jesus comes to his dream again and he says, my son, why are you sad? And he says, I failed you. You asked me to push the rock and I failed you. I couldn't even move it one inch. And Jesus said, you think you have failed, but look at you. You were sick before 90 days, but now you are strong. Your muscles were weak. Now trying to move this rock or push this rock, you have become strong, you have become healthy. He says, yes, I understand all of that. I really am grateful for that. But yet, I didn't do what you told me to do. But Jesus said, you did exactly what I told you to do. He says, how? I didn't even move it one inch. Jesus said, I told you to push the rock. I didn't tell you to move it. I didn't tell you to move it. I think it applies to us being part of Swami's mission. Our job is to keep the doors open. Our job is to simply push the rock, not move it. Let us not try to transform, like Baba said. Your job is not to transform. Share from your heart, you will be the street lamp. The street lamp doesn't talk, doesn't do anything, doesn't try to transform or create more devotee. It simply lights. In that light, people will say, where is that coming from? And I can share with you my own experiences. When I do yoga workshops with Americans, and I go to other organizations, the Unity Churches, to speak. And I spoke at one organization in Toledo, and I'm going there again end of October to speak. This is a Center for Conscious Living. It's about 40, 50 Americans who meet there. And they are open to all teachers, all teachings, though they are all based from Christianity, being from this part of the world. Having said that, the first time they had heard about me, their secretary wrote to me, and then she called and spoke to me. She said, I know from what a little I've heard, I know you're a follower of Sai Baba. We would like you to just focus on his teachings, not too much about him. because we don't want to create an impression that you're trying to sell Sai Baba to us. I said, no, I promise you I won't sell Sai Baba. She said, okay, so we are looking forward to it. And I had some topic, I forget what it was, because it was many years ago. And I've gone there many times ever since. So I went there and spoke about Swami's teachings in practical ways of how it has helped my life. Not hardly mentioning Swami at all. And then at the end of my talk, they were saying, so somebody asked, so you keep saying ashram and you're a guru, so who is this guru? I said, you asked me the question, so now I'll answer. So I said, his name is Sai Baba, he's a world teacher, he's in India, and I made it very low-key. And I left it at that. Then a couple of months later, they called me again, or maybe 6 months later, they said, could you come again, people enjoyed your talk, could you come again and speak? I said, sure. And so I picked up another topic and I went there. And this time when I walked in, there was a chair placed and there was a big picture of Swami on the chair. So when I got a mic, I said, I thought you guys were not into gurus and teachers, and what is the picture of Sai Baba doing here? They said, no, we want to honor your guru. It struck home that soft selling is the best way to sell. You don't have to hard sell Swami. You speak about his teachings, they automatically, they know where is this coming from. Exactly. How come it has helped your life so much? Who is this teacher? And then let them discover the teacher. Our job is to open the doors to Swami. And now they want to come and spend more time with me, and they've called me again to speak. The point is, this is how Swami, the message of Swami is, you share your experience, what is from your heart, and that is the beauty of it. When they see you've got so established in your faith, and your faith has inspired you, then they will want, I need that faith. Why am I don't have that faith? Where did you all get that faith from? How did you get that faith from? And then when you share that faith with your children, with your friends, with your spouse, with your family and family members and communities and friends and so on and so forth, then automatically they begin to look towards Swami and say, who is this Sai Baba? And the beauty of it is, then Swami begins to bless their life in his own manner, in his own way. And that is how I think we become part of this mission of Swami. Swami has so many lessons to teach us. And yesterday, as I was sharing this thought of surrender, I want to touch upon that again, because many of y'all came and shared similar thoughts and also some questions. One thing I want to definitely clarify, and let me just summarize what we spoke yesterday, and then I'll clarify it. What I want to summarize is, we spoke about how when things become very difficult, or you get into the habit of taking whatever you want, and you focus on the excellence part of it and leave the outcome of any action of yours, you don't worry about the outcome of that action. You take that outcome and offer it to Swami. Say, I'm not worried about the outcome. I don't want to worry about the outcome. You handle the outcome. Let me focus on the effort. The effort is very important. Because somebody said, well, that when I offer it to Swami, you mean I should just sit back and wait? No, it doesn't work like that. I didn't say surrender the effort also. The effort should be there. What happens is, when we work towards something, we begin to own our actions. As if it is me, I am doing it. When you don't own it, then you don't own the outcome as well. So don't own the project. Don't own the action. Don't own your desire. Work towards it and leave the outcome to Baba. You know, this, when we talk of seizing on desires, it is tied to the surrender concept. There is a way to manifest anything you want in life. Anything you want in life without desiring for it. That is the secret of sealing on desires. The word Swami uses in Telugu is Korikulu, right? Korikulu. Korikulu is literally translated, it is craving. The craving, the wanting. The problem is not the desire. And I want you to think about this. The problem is not in desire. The problem is in the wanting, the craving. Why? Because in the mindfulness, we talked about it. And there are many doctors here who will agree, and there are young children, and all of you know about what is happening in modern science. They're coming closer and closer to the spiritual tenets of Sanatana Dharma, Vedanta, and deep spirituality, because they're beginning to understand that we are not just an inert body with some chemicals and electrical impulses in the brain, but there's something more deeper going on. So they have begun to understand that brain and thoughts do create your reality for you. The neural paths that are constantly firing creates a reality, to the extent that the senses don't really give you the truth. This is exactly what Swami was telling us. This guy, exactly what Vedanta is telling us. There is a very nice series in television. You can watch it with children, I suppose. But again, I don't have children, but I think this is a very intelligent, it's called Brain Games. So there they show you how you think what is a blue color is actually not a blue color at all. It's dark gray. But it appears blue because of the light is reflected. But your eyes are seeing exactly blue, and everybody in the audience says, this is blue, this is blue, this is blue. And then the scientist says, is it really blue? Let's see. And it's not blue at all. So the eyes don't give you. The ears in the same way don't give you the actual sound. We're only listening to a particular set of frequency. There are so many sounds above that frequency, below that frequency. We don't listen to it. Doesn't mean the sound doesn't exist. So there is a whole world beyond our senses. But because our mind is subject to the information that comes within the senses, we define a reality. And the brain thinks that is a reality. The mind, which is a software for the brain, operates on that, and we build it stronger and stronger and stronger with our likes and dislikes becoming stronger and stronger. And then comes Baba. Now he becomes a role model, a prototype, if you will, a proof of concept, where he says, all that you are thinking is wrong. Here's the real reality. And what is that reality? The universe is within you. You are God. They're like, wait a minute. That is not my reality. My reality is I'm a poor little puny human being and I'm subject to all this. He says, no, wake up. So how do you now take that as reality and make it unreal? That is the whole objective of the spiritual practice. That is what he has come to awake. And for us, he came because now it is no longer a concept, no longer an abstract thing with Vedanta taught thousands of years ago. In this day and age, in flesh and blood, he came and proved to us that time and space is again a matter of your reality. You don't have to, you truly are beyond time and space. Through the leelas that Swami has performed, my dear sisters and brothers, all of you know this. I don't have to, it's like preaching to the choir. But it amazes us every time when we listen to the enormous love that Swami had, and the unlimited access to this infinite cosmic power. And the beauty in it, at the end of the day, Swami will say, you also have that access. It's like almost like my back door opens to Disney World and I'm crying with my dad, please take me to Disney World, please take me to Disney World. And all the time the dad is saying, just open, go and play in the back door. So no, I don't want to play in the back door, I want to go to Disney World. All my friends are going to Disney World. What if you tell that child? Go open the back door. The Disney World is here. No, dad, I want to go to Disney World. Because she's seeing everybody else getting in the car and driving all the way, but they're driving to her backyard. This is exactly what Swami is saying. You have God in your backyard. In other words, within you, the divinity is lying, waiting. It's almost like Swami is sitting inside waiting for you to call. So what prevents it? This is where the ceiling on desires come, the craving, the wanting. I want God realization. I want Swami. The good news is, it's a good thought. But here's the bad news. If you want Swami, you won't get Him. Sorry. Now you'll say, why? Because there is one big bad word in that. Want. So what happens? When you keep saying, I want, I want, I want, I want, the wanting becomes reality. And you're kept wanting. You know this famous example which people cite, where one devotee was praying to the Lord saying, please, I really want to be counting money all the time. I need to have so much money in my hand that I should be able to count endlessly. And he became a bank teller. So he got a job as a teller in the bank. He was counting day and night. It was not his money. When you want something, you'll be kept wanting. That is a reality that really becomes true. This is why they said, watch, be very careful about not just your thoughts, but the emotion that comes behind the thought. So the more we say, I want, I want, I want, it just doesn't reach Him. Swami came once to our I want, because this is what I truly believe, and again, like I always say, these are all perspectives we share. I want you to think about it and see how it makes sense to you all. Swami came, and I've shared this story before also, but in this context, it's so important that I share how I learned this lesson. Not once, twice, but this is an important turning point in my life when I finally got it. And I shared this experience with Swami, and this is what Swami said. So bear with me if you all know this story. Swami came to our hostel and spoke about Soham Pranayama among his whole discourse. And I was constantly, my antennas were up looking for any tits and bits he would throw on yoga, pranayama, soham, meditation. My eyes will go, oh, he's talking something about my favorite subject. So, you know, Swami encouraged us individually to practice yoga, even as groups. He would say, Dunapatulara, Tintanaru, Patkuntanaru, exercise chandi and all that. And he sent one lady to the hostel. The only, perhaps, one lady to a boy's hostel. She was 72 years old. So Swami thought she's safe with all these young guys from Bombay and Pune and Delhi. This 72-year-old, at that point in the 80s, was Indira Devi. When I, as a 17-year-old, saw the 72-year-old perform asanas, immediately in my mind said, I want to be like that when I'm 72 years old. That imprinted so deeply within me that I took to yoga practice and I have never looked back. Until then, I was practicing yoga at bits and pieces and all that, but that opened the door for a very serious practice, and she brought Swami into that, so it really tied in beautifully. She had even had a book called Sai Yoga, which is unfortunately, I don't believe it's on print anymore. So this is how, you know, she, the Swami would encourage her in small little ways, and he opens the door and says, okay, see if this helps you, see if this helps you. And so bhajan boys will take bhajans, yoga boys will take yoga, gymnastics boys will take gymnastics, mic and audiovisual boys will take audiovisual, because they know Swami will come behind the stage and talk to them and check out what instruments they have. So everybody took something knowing that could be a road to Swami. That is the beauty of that. So incidentally, Swami, so when he spoke about Soham, I was listening, I was saying, oh gosh, he's talking about Soham. And Swami gave a very beautiful explanation on Soham that day. And he said, Soham is one of the greatest mantras that is chanted in your breath is chanting it. All you do is listen. You don't even have to chant it. Listen to the sound that is going on in and out. You inhale the so, exhale the hum. When you inhale the so is that. That. Because there is no name to this infinite principle. We call it Brahman, Tat, Sat, That, So, Sat, So, they go together. So, you breathe in the So, you're breathing the infinite. And the little hum, the I, has no place now, so it goes out. So, hum. So, hum. So, hum. So, he explained the So wonderfully. I immediately said, okay, I'm going to practice the So Hum Pranayama. And then Swami gave me a sign to, you know, on those days I had just started my yoga as my, I loved it so much. I wanted Swami to encourage me in that path. And so I wanted to look for every sign that he was giving me personally, that this is my path. And so I said, Swami, I'm going to practice Soham Pranayama now. You told me, and I'll take this as your initiation, and I'm going to practice it. So the next 2 or 3 days, I practiced hard, really hard. Every waking moment, I was trying to listen to Soham and practice Soham. And I was practicing with one goal in view. I wanted, WANTED, in caps, wanted Swami to show me a sign that this is your path. So I figured, this was, you know, towards 83, 84. I was not in Swami's room then. I had come out of it. Now I was like a regular hostel boy going in line for darshan. So those days, when you go for darshans and you see a bunch of line of students coming in, it's not the same students who stand in the first line. Because we found out that people, the boys would skip tea and coffee, they'll skip snacks and go and stand first, right in the gate, 1 hour before the line goes up for darshan itself. Then Baba said, don't do that. Have a turn. Every class will get a different turn. Every day one class will come. So now you're competing only with 30 boys, not with 300 boys. So it became a little less dramatic when going for darshan. So I figured the Thursday that is coming is going to be our graduation class. We get a chance to sit in front. And so I figured if I practice next 3 days, Swami will show me some sign that this is my path. And so I really practiced hard. And so when the day on Thursday came, I was ready to meet Swami. And so I'm standing in the line, going for darshan, and I said, somehow I'll make sure I sit next to the birthday boy. Right when Swami opens the door, and he steps out, to his right is bhajan hall door, to the front is a long passage, VIPs, and to this side the boys sit. For some of you, I'm just giving a pictorial representation. And then right in front, there is a big pillar, and below that pillar, there will be the birthday boys. If there's one or two boys, they will sit there, and then the other boys will sit there. They always give in the first chance. Swami come and bless them on their birthday, take the sweets and throw it to the other boys. And that's a great divine opportunity that boys got. They could get that picture signed from Swami. Whatever they wanted, Swami would give them on that day. It was a beautiful occasion for one-on-one, with every boy had that opportunity. So, thankfully that day there was just one boy. So I said, I'll sit next to that boy, so when Swami opens the door, he'll see me. And this was how audacious I had become by then. So as I was walking in the line, I said, Swami, I want you to give me a sign, but listen, just coming and standing in front of me is not a sign. Just looking at me is not a sign. So you have to, you know, give me something out of the world. I don't know what it is. I need a real special sign. Like, I know this is really, that is my path. If you just look and smile, that you do very often, that's not, imagine it. I mean, now if I think of it, tears come to my eyes because, anyway, so I'm going to give me this out of the world sign. Just don't simply look and walk away and all that. So because I'm very sure all this everyday Swami does, so why? So I go and sit, and I'm closing. I'm still practicing Soham, but in my mind now Soham is slowly dying. This wanting is Swami, please now Swami. This is the only chance. Why? Because 3 days of hard practice, I can't really keep up that for the next week. So once he shows my path, I'll keep it morning and evening, right? I can't do it so hard as this. So I dreaded the concept of extending it, number one. Number two is, I was singing bhajans. So as soon as darshan gets over, I have to go into the bhajan hall because Swami will be giving an interview and I have to sit in the bhajan hall. Bhajan hall, Swami sits on the chair and he is waving, he becomes a god there. I mean, there's no personal one-on-one. And so I said, the only chance is darshan time. This is where he can have me converse with you or talk to you or something. So I sat thinking, Swami, this is a good chance. So I'm right in the front. I can't go wrong. I put all the ducks were literally lined up in a row. I covered everything. And so Swami opens the door. He comes out for darshan. He comes straight to the bazaar, birthday boy. He picks up the sweets and throws it because nothing falls on me. And I was like, okay, cool. I don't want this. I didn't ask for any sign. And so it fell everywhere. And Swami blessed him, spoke to him. And then to my shock, he looked at everyone but me. I was like, first, that thought never struck me that he'll actually ignore me. We had taken it for granted. Oh yeah, I don't want all that looks and all. He took it literally. So the thought never struck me that he won't look at me also because I'm right there. So he threw the boy, he smiled like this, and then he spoke to one or two boys, something generally he looked around, and then he turned and started going towards the lady's side. And then it struck me, oh God, what if he ignores me completely? That proposition never came in until this actually happened. And that put me on a panic mode. Panic mode saying, as Swami was going for darshan, my mind was saying, Swami, now listen, you didn't even look at me. I didn't even think of this. No, please don't ignore me now. But please give me the sign. Please give me the sign. And so, the reason I'm saying this so much in detail is, I was focusing so much on the wanting the sign. Okay, I want to really take that home. Because as Swami was finishing his darshan, I was getting more panicky. Why? Because the interview group was very big. That means I definitely know I cannot sit there. I have to go into the bhajan hall. This will be a 1.5 hour interview. Bhajans would have started. Swami might just come for a couple of bhajans and take aarti and go. This evening is done. It's a washout for us. It's like the rain. Once the rain comes, you're stuck. You can't really get, you can't go back and forth. If it's a smaller group, we'll say, okay, you know, we used to calculate, okay, 30 minute interview this must be, and we'll wait. Not that we could guess what Swami would do, but, you know, we would hope that he would come out again and he would have time to chat. But this big group, we said, no, Swami is just going straight for bhajans. And so, that's why I got more and more panicky. Now, as Swami was finishing, and I saw him walking past and he's coming closer and closer, I settled down. I said, okay, Swami, you know what? Forget all this special sign. Just look at me. Please don't ignore me. This is the worst case scenario. I mean, I love yoga. I don't want to give it up. But I want you to, if you ignore me, then I'm completely confused. Please don't ignore me. At least look at me. Please, Swami, don't ignore me. Now it became completely desperate. Swami came. He came and stood right in front of me. Okay? Not looked at me yet. He came and stood in front of me. He is getting people for, you know, when Swami decides to get aloof, he can be really so distant that you wonder, where is this Swami? Where is my Swami in this, you know? He can be so aloof. So he stood in front of me, speaking to a boy 2 rows behind me. Geta, where are you from? Oh, this boy is from here. Your parents are here? Okay, call them. So all this is going on vaguely at the back. So this boy is getting up, he's looking for his dad and mom and waiting. So Swami's, that time is going on there. And I am sitting here looking up to Swami. I can literally look into Swami's nostrils because he was so close. And my mind is screaming, Swami, just look down. Please, look down. Just look down, Swami. Please, look down. Look down. Look down. You know, it doesn't need, you don't need to be a god to know somebody's staring at you like a hawk, right? You walk somewhere and somebody's looking at you and wonder, why is this person staring at me? Is it because of my white and white clothes or what? You don't, anybody can see that. And this is somebody sitting right in the field looking up like this, desperately looking for that one glimpse now. That's how desperate he makes you. Suddenly everything is forgotten. And yes, I'll finish the story. So, and it became so desperate and he was not listening. And he stood, and to my shock and horror, he turned without even glancing at me. He turned and he went into the, he started telling the interview room people to go inside. He collected all of them. He's standing with the back, with his back facing to us, looking towards the door. And I'm still saying, Swami, please do it, please. And he goes inside and he's about to shut the door. Now, for those of you who don't know, when he's about to shut the door, sometimes, you know, just as he shuts the door, he's in a good mood, he'll look like this and make a face like this at some point. Only at the boys. Or he'll smile, he'll do some face like this and shut the door. So it's that's a beauty of Swami. I mean, that's something the boys had the privilege to enjoy. Nobody else would see it. Even the VIPs can't see it. It is just one angle. So some boys will sit particularly to see that angle. So that when he closes the door, that eye contact will be there. You don't know what all boys get to get that one glimpse and one touch of Swami and that one-on-one connection. It mattered to us. That's what transformed us. That each look, each thought, each word had a lesson for us. So I was hoping at least before Swami look, please. But my shock, the door shut. And as the door shut, I almost like burst out crying, but I just held myself. This birthday boy got up, everybody gets up, you know, they all dusting. Everybody gets up. This boy got up and went to back. And I slid into the pillar area just to quieten myself. At that moment, I was completely emotionally drained, spiritually drained. Because until then, for the last 20 minutes or so, it was just panic and intense praying, wanting Swami, please, please, please. And I was just, wow, it's over. And there was no thought there, just complete, I was completely drained. Okay? And before I knew, this is what happened in the next one few seconds, suddenly the door clicked. The click sound came and we all looked up. And all of this, what happens next, happens very fast. The door clicked, we all looked up, and the door opened and Swami came out. And he was in a rush. He came out, he's still not looking at me. He came out and he said, he looked at the lady, said, hey, lazy, come, come. So one lady had been left out. So he came out to call her. God knows what prayer she was doing, right? So this is amazing how he could orchestrate millions of things at once. This is the cosmic intelligence that orchestrates everything here that you see, including the intricate details of our body. So that lady is walking towards Swami saying, lazy, lazy, come, and he's standing. So I'm sitting down, Swami standing up, looking at the lady, not looking at me, and I'm just looking at Swami now. I can't again crank up the emotion. And mine was completely gone. By then I was just staring and looking. And Swami said, go inside. And she went inside. And I'm looking at Swami. And Swami turned around. His fingers, he had materialized vibhuti. So his fingertips had vibhuti. I didn't even notice until that point. He turned around with his thumb, put vibhuti on my forehead. Wow. And he walked and shut the door. He he's given me 5 minute warning, so I'll finish it real quick. But this is one of my favorite stories. I go back every day of my life when I'm tempted to pray. And I shared this experience with Swami. I shared it in this context. I said, when I was asking, even though Swami was 2 inches away from me, he couldn't hear it. Because I was so full of what I want. Not the desire, but the wanting was becoming more and more real. So the wanting became more and more real. The manifestation of that sign which I wanted was not there. So Swami allowed the wanting to be existing. And then when I stopped asking, out of sheer exhaustion, my mind became silent. He heard my prayer. Because he knows already it is there. When he says, I want peace, remove the I, remove the want. Peace is already there. So the desire that you and I want will manifest itself. Because that is why the desire is planted in you. And I'm saying, let it be a BMW or a Tesla, a home, a service project, whatever the desire is. There's no desire that is good or bad. But bad, it becomes bad simply because we focus on the lack of it. And the lack of it becomes real than the fulfillment of it. So I said in the voice, and I ended my talk saying, it is in the depths of silence that the voice of God can be heard. And I heard Swami's voice. And I took Swami's namaskar in Kodaikanal after saying this, with Swami standing next to me. And Swami patted my back, and as I got up, he repeated it. Yes, it is only in the depths of silence you can hear my voice. But, he says, so okay, there's a but to it. But, same silence, I can also hear your voice. I can also hear your voice. So the original quote was, it's in the depth of silence that voice of God can be heard, that you can hear the voice of God. But he says the same silence, God can also hear your voice. He corrected me, he says, at that silence I heard what your voice was. It was only in silence that I heard your voice, not when you were asking and crying and praying and pleading. That's why he says, forget Daya Karo, Kripa Karo songs. These are one of my favorite songs. Daya Karo, He Daya Nide, He Bhagavan. Swami, you see, Swami will make, not going to sing. Because Swami would make a face, I don't want to sing this bhajan. But I'm saying, but he says, stop crying. Just chant the name of God, because when you focus on the one who will fulfill all of that, automatically all of that will get fulfilled. He says, I'm the Kalpavriksha, don't come to me and ask for